home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, positively into March. It's almost baseball season, but it's crab cake season. We were out at the Gertrude's on Wednesday. We'll be at Costas Inn on Friday, and then on to our final crab cake tour stop of March before opening day. It's going to be at Missoni's over in Perry Hall. I'm looking forward to that. I will have two different kinds of scratch-offs. They're Harlem Globetrotters, the red, the gold, the red. They're at UMBC this month, and we've had some winners as well. Also, our friends at GBMC and our newest sponsor at Farnan and Dermer. I promise not to mispronounced that. They are the comfort guys. They're keeping me comfortable, and hopefully I won't have to run my AC or my heat too much. But when I do, they're there for me. This guy's been there for me for a long, long time. He was the one time, I don't want to say big poobah with the Orioles, but you ran
No.
things for a period of time many years ago in the Larry Lucchino era and the opening of Camden Yards, which seems like, oh, 4 decades ago, because it was. Marty Conway is the good professor of all things sports business at Georgetown University, and a wealth of insider business, media, tickets, sales, sponsorships, teams, ownership, but not managers. We have a new coach. We have a new baseball manager. Marty, it's been a while since I've had you on. First off, welcome. Happy New Year to you. Happy baseball season. How's life for you? Everything good?
Yeah, everything's good. Look, it's springtime, next, it's soon, we've got pitchers and catchers. Soon we'll have real baseball and also other things on other sports. So it's a good time of the year, I think, actually, for sports,
Well, we got World Cup too. When you and I have been at that a lot, but the baseball side of this, let's get into that lane. Because I mean, you and I talk football and football season, baseball and baseball season. There's plenty going on with the draft and the Ravens and Lamar and all that. As we get into this baseball season, we are now literally 2 years to the month of Peter dying. We're 2 years and a month, 25 months out or 23 months out on Rubenstein taking over opening day press conferences. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to have money. I get asked because I get invited on other places. Well, what are the Orioles really doing there? And I'm like, well, they spent money on a first baseman. They hired a new manager. They've taken some of the state money and thrown the Jim Henneman press box out, and they're creating suite seats that you and I could discuss who the customer for a $38,000 season ticket is. But I'm waiting to see sort of tectonic plates. And I felt it from a baseball perspective when they give Chris Bassitt $19 million in February, right? They didn't buy $19 million number three, number four pitchers back in the day. That was not an Angelos thing. And they certainly didn't sign people like Pete Alonso, although Chris Davis got money and, Peter spent some money here, Tejada, and a couple of things that they did. But it does feel from a fan's perspective like they're running the baseball team and the budget and the way they're going to spend money. That there is a lane for that. The rest of it, I don't know where the lane is with media, with television, with Katie Griggs, with press, with answering questions, with ownership, with the battery that's going to get built around the stadium that they're alleging. I don't see any progress on any of that. All I hear about are the battle drums of the labor stoppage that's inevitable that's coming in 10 months.
There's not a person that I've spoken to either in the media or in and around the baseball industry who doesn't say that what it feels like now, 10 months out, 8, 9 months out from when the collective bargaining agreement ends, that they've been this far apart. And usually at this point, they've been in discussions. They're very clear on what the issues are, and the issues at some point begin to narrow. At this point, the people that I talk to feel like it's farther apart than it's been in several work stoppages. And in addition, you've had a recent transition in the head of the MLB Players Association. So all of that, I think, yes, if I were to put it in words, I think people are collecting themselves for almost a nuclear winter again in baseball, which it's really hard to imagine. That with all of the progress that they have, currently we're looking at the World Baseball Classic underway, Ohtani, all the different storylines that are super positive for baseball, that there's this other channel stereo of saying, yeah, but enjoy it while you can until October or November, because after that, we're going to our respective camps. And in one camp, they anticipate and want a salary cap. And on the other camp, you have a group who, since the days of Marvin Miller, and the advent of the Players Association have been the one associate players group that has been able to adamantly oppose a salary cap. So, I'm under the impression of enjoy it while you can, while the sun is out, because soon the sun's going to go behind some clouds and could be a very tough fall and winter for baseball.
Marty Conway is my guest. You are a different cat because you lived through all this. This isn't
Yeah.
bourgeois to you. You
No.
worked it. You're working for George Bush in the middle of a strike in 1994. You worked for Larry Lucchino, Ebert Bennett Williams, all of that when the battle drums were there. Lords of the Realm came out on your watch. I got to find John Hellyer at some point, catch up with him. One of the greatest books ever written about baseball to really understand the topicality and the subject matter. After I collected the Steve Carlton and Curt Flood baseball cards, I went back and figured out how it all kind of came together. But all these years later, they've always wanted to break the union. The union never felt breakable. It felt much more like they were going to really come to physical blows back in the day when it was Mark Belanger and Marvin Miller and Andy Messersmith and all of that. Like it was really nasty. And then the collusion part of things that I spent a lot of time talking to Mike Flanagan because he was one of the guys that got swept up and got screwed, you know, by collusion, cost him millions of dollars. So the modern part of this is Steinbrenner's dead, Angelos is dead, but Selig's not around. You know, like the people that were involved in all of this, Marvin Miller, Don Fear, we can go through all the names of all the, Tony Clark's even gone now. My question is, where's the appetite for the players for a young Gunnar Henderson to say, I'm going to walk off the job when he has a $15 million arbitration number next year? That's always the question in the strike fund. And I'm astonished at how squishy people are on the issue. It really reminds me of like sort of Israel, Iran, United States, bombs, war, no war, Republican, Democrat. I see people crossing their own political lines and they don't realize it. They don't realize it. I think the baseball thing, I've talked to people that think, well, there's got to be a salary cap. There's got to be a salary cap. Salary, hockey, the Giants and the Green Bay Packers, there's a salary cap, a salary cap, a salary cap. I'm like, you're taking the billionaire side. You don't realize it. You don't realize it. But when I get to talking to them, then they burr up. I'm a union man. I'm a no. I'm a baseball fan, and I want it to be fair. I want the Pirates and the Royals and the Orioles to be able to compete with the Dodgers and the Cubs and the Yankees. But they've been pocketing the money for 30 years. There's scumbags like Jeffrey Loria and Peter Angelos just put the money in their pocket for the luxury tax. They tried to solve this amongst the owners. And then every Curt Schilling that I knew 30 years ago would say to me, this isn't about the players versus the owners. It's about the owners versus the owners because they have two different structures of how much money they have. And I know Peter's dead, as is the Mass and Television Network for most. The Orioles are more unprotected than they've ever been. When Peter went to war, he had DC, he had two markets, he had 6 million people, he had subs in seven states. Like, this is a different war for Rubenstein and Arrighetti, and that's where I want to get clear with you as to what these rich guys think. And did they even know 2 years ago when they wanted bobbleheads and they wanted to be big shots and philanthropists and all that, that they were going to put on war shoes for this in 8 months? And I'm not even sure that they even know what they signed up for. And I certainly know that Peter didn't know what he signed up for because Joe Foss told me.
Well, you mentioned the important point there, which is Don Fair has said this when he was head of the Players Union, one of the best heads of labor ever, along with Marvin Miller, that it really was before the players could negotiate with the owners needed to finish negotiating amongst themselves. And that's how he felt. He was not going to get involved and get the players involved in an argument between big markets and small markets. Wealthy owners, not so wealthy owners, whatever it was,
And you
he would
believe that? You believe that? I do. I believe
100%.
yeah, okay.
No, having been around the rooms, when you see various, they're just varied viewpoints of how you run. Any industry has this, whether it's the airline industry or hospitality, whatever it is, there are different philosophies on how you run your business and how you get additional revenue streams and how you protect yourselves and things of the sort.
And big
And
guys
so,
always do it different than little guys.
well, they had just different sets of assets, right? In
Yeah.
Los Angeles and Chicago and New York, you have a different set of media opportunities. And so your revenue structure is different, and you're trying, yes, baseball has tried from Bud Selig to, on through Rob Manfred to try to figure out a way on the owner's side to manage by revenue sharing and other cost controls that they could enforce along the way, luxury taxes, things of the sort. But again, it comes back to if you are committed and you're committed to winning championships, there's a cost to do that. And a lot of times it takes you into the red at some point. Now, you might not be in a position, you might have to, Wayne Huizenga went into the red decades ago for the Florida Marlins. He had to end up deconstructing the team and then selling the team because he couldn't afford the losses over the length of time. And so every, income statement for a Major League Baseball team is different. They're sort of like snowflakes. They sort of group into quadrants, if you will, but each one is uniquely different. And they're waiting, some of them are waiting for a system to reconstitute itself so that they feel like they can be competitive, while others are getting involved in the competitive. Larry Lucchino used to say all the time to us, there's going to be haves and have-nots, and we want to be in the haves. And whatever that took, now we were a mighty small market in Baltimore, and they were different economic conditions at the time. But that was the fighter mentality that Larry always had, which is we're going to do whatever it takes to be competitive. We're going to find the places that we can leverage and pull levers on. But ultimately, yes, it comes back to that. How do you feel about the Dodgers? How do you feel about the Mets? How do you feel about some other organizations? But there's just some built-in inequities in professional sports. And if you spend your life trying to dull those edges down so that everybody is equal, you're going to end up with something like Major League Soccer, which then becomes, no interest. People love winners, and they love the zeitgeist of winner versus loser, big market versus small market. So I understand where the owners are coming from. You would like to say, as in the NBA, but even with the NBA, there's a salary cap. There are Larry Bird exceptions. There's other things. And look at the way it's worked out. In order for in a world of a salary cap in the NBA, you still have teams. Adam Silver's biggest challenge right now is to prevent teams from losing intentionally to try to get to a draft to get up. They're not spending salary cap money to do it. So be careful what you wish for when you get a salary cap, because not everybody's going to be like the NFL with is more media dollars than they could ever want pouring into their business to support everything that's not capped. So trainers, nutrition, facilities, and all that. When you have a cap, you can spend in other areas in order to be competitive.
Marty Conway is here. He's a good professor of all things business and sports business at Georgetown. He's been my friend for 4 decades, and we're talking baseball right now and money. All right, let's get out of the clouds on the work stoppage because that's down the line. Let's you and me are Katie Griggs and Mark Fine today. We're going to run the team. We're going to be the marketing heads. We're going to have whatever's the left of Masson, and they're going to bring Ryan Ripken and Ben McDonald to market their team sitting in a studio in Hunt Valley watching spring training baseball games without even being there and knowing what's going on. By the way, Rock Kabako was the best announcer they've had the last 3 weeks because he's actually talked to the players and actually been there. Like from there really is a benefit to that if Greg Bader doesn't understand that or Katie Griggs, they're unqualified to own their job. Like literally, there is a point where this is the time of the year to introduce Pete Alonso, to introduce Bassett, to reintroduce Gunnar Henderson on the world stage of the U.S. Like, this is a marketing opportunity that should get everybody salivating for March 26th and opening day. They don't know how to do this. They have no DNA for doing it in regard to the Angelos family. Your generation had winter carnivals and tickets going on sale and opening the club level for people who couldn't afford it to come down on a Christmas night and meet Santa Claus and get a candy cane and buy a hat. And like all of the things that you did that I saw happen here that they cannot manage to bring in. And I shook Katie Griggs's hand 2 months ago. I've offered whatever wisdom I have, and I offer it on the air every day. But where is their big revenue coming from? Because Masson's falling apart, the network's falling apart. Even if the team is good, they're basically saying this is going to come in ticket sales, right? And we saw the Cardinals pull their pants down for the $29 outfield, come eat your chicken tenders and everything but a beer. And I guess they're figuring. $29, I'll buy 3 beers. I'll get $80 a cap out of these people before they leave. But parking, all the other stuff that they're trying to do, like a movie theater, just get people in. What are you seeing that you think they've done well? And where do you think they're lacking at this point? Because I don't hear enough about them. I don't hear people buying their tickets. I see hats, white paneled hats, but I keep saying to people, have you reached for your credit card yet? Because they need your money. They're after your money, not your heart. They know I like baseball. They're trying to get our money. I keep saying to myself, where's the money coming from, Marty? What do they think? Where do they believe the money's coming from? Because they just spent hundreds of millions of dollars of our tax money to wipe out the press box. Didn't even involve Janet Maria. I have no, probably going to look like a dentist office when I get there. And they don't have customers to buy those seats. They didn't target and say, well, we need to have a $40,000 season ticket because we got a waiting list for that. We got to create the, they're creating these things and they still haven't figured out to sell their core product, which is really problematic for me with Bobblehead Night and Nelly Night and all the, what about baseball night? What about we love the Orioles and we want to be into baseball night? I don't think they do that well, and I don't think anybody during the Bader administration, going back to John Angelos, that nobody really did that part of it well, which is we want you to love baseball, not lacrosse.
Yeah, well, when you get the kinds of money, it doesn't matter in Baltimore, Atlanta, wherever it is. When you get that kind of state, city, county, wherever you're getting your big wave of reinvestment from, $600 million in the case of the Orioles, $600 million for the Ravens from the Maryland legislature a few years ago. The first thing you do is you put it into areas where fans will directly see a benefit. So, in some cases, depending on what your history has been, I think in the case of the Orioles and Camden Yards, it's been about the video audio experience. That was something that had never really been. That scoreboard was, we developed that scoreboard, for the 1992 opening.
I'm envisioned.
It's been that way in all that time. They were trying to do some tweaks here and there to the audio. It never really worked. So one of the things they've done, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that turns out, is the video and audio experience. Now, I think you're going to go from your 12-inch, 13-inch television to your 70-inch television. It's probably initially going to seem really overwhelming, but people will get used to that. And then the whole audio experience, it was always hard to hear the PA address and all those things. So I think they've put money in there. The second wave of things that you put money in, and sometimes it's simultaneous, is you want to put dollars into where you can get 3, 4, 5, 7x, 8 dollars back. And that is in the premium areas, because what's happening in sports, there's a development underway at Capital One Arena in Washington. And one of their stated objectives is to take their percentage of premium revenue, which currently is at 11%. So, of all the seats in the arena, 11% are considered some premium level, and they're taking that to 33%. So that one third of every opportunity inside the arena has some elevated premium, spend more money
So
experience.
it's more $200 tickets and less $40 tickets because they think there are more $200 customers.
Well,
That's the part that boggles my mind in Baltimore, that Katie Griggs would come in here in this town and think they're just going to mine money. That's the part that, how about more $10 tickets? I hear you, and that doesn't create revenue, but thinking this mind frame of we're going to sell more $38,000 season tickets than $500 Birdland packages, and that's how we're going to get there. I don't think they've identified who their customer is. That's the problem. They have this first class. They've expanded the first class, and there aren't any first class customers. People want to sit and coach. Southwest Airlines found that out this month in a big way.
Well, I think also what's driving it too is what's happened across the parking lot at the football stadium, where they've done that, and there has been some uptake. I mean, one of the things you have to keep in mind sometimes is you should never underestimate the amount of money in a market. I totally understand where you're coming from in Baltimore's approach, but it's also how many times does some so there's kind of a science to it. How many times do some people come? How often do they attend? What do they spend? And again, rather than have coming three times, if they come twice, but their expenditure is more than if they came three times, that's the approach. Now, today, especially people of a certain demographic age, say under the age of 40, 35, and below, they are really willing to spend on a premium experience. Sometimes it doesn't even include a view of the game. Literally, they're so accustomed to going to sports bars and betting parlors where there's televisions and everything around it. They're putting their credit card out and they have no idea at the end what they've really spent. Now,
Kind of like a cruise
the
ship when you drink.
exactly. So the cl now the club, that's a different experience. You're saying to people, you've got somewhere between 250 and maybe 300 total seats in there, roughly, give or take. You're saying, is there a market for companies to buy two, to buy four, organizations, whatever it is? That's the gambit. I think, look, initially, the same thing happened. I keep referring to Capital One Arena. They came out with a program called these Lexus Vaults, where they've taken the best seats between the foul lines for basketball and between the blue lines for hockey. And they've said these seats are now uber expensive, but they're attached to this club. Well, sometimes you look at the game on television, and 50% of those seats are empty.
Madison Square Garden's had that for years, right? You
Yes.
can really see it in Madison Square Garden where Sting
Yeah.
would sit and where the
Yep.
celebrities sit, and it's empty. It's always
Yeah.
empty. Behind home plate at Yankee Stadium,
And
those big
Nats
black
Park.
seats, they're always empty.
And Nats Park, right? Because there is that thing. Now, the thing about it is those seats have to be bought. Now, if somebody bought it and decided to stay in the bar area back there, that's a different story. But those seats have to be bought. That takes time. That takes time to reintroduce your pricing scheme into the marketplace. There will be some shortfalls initially, but I think with the expectation of what's to come and other events that'll be in the stadium, maybe an all-star game at some point, there's going to be some inducements to why you want to buy that a premium opportunity. But again, Baltimore's a unique market. We started this conversation with each market being like a snowflake. That's where the real work is to re-educate people into what the experience is. But at the end of the day, Nestor, you know this, you've got to put a winning team on the field, and you've now have to put a repeated winning team on the field, because when you're selling in the off season, people have to believe this is the year, quote unquote, this is the year, and I want to be involved in it.
And behind the backdrop of all of this is where we began, which is we lock out next year. How much do we want to spend? Where do we want to be? Let's have a wartime plan that they have to have. But for Katie Griggs to come in here a year and a half ago from another market, knowing no one, having all of this data, and you give me all this science BS about there's data and these data points, they think Baltimore is something that me living here, I'm wondering. If they think this is a normal place, or they think it's still attached to DC, or they think too much about the military complex and how much money there might be here, or old money that might be here. But they inherited something that had been really shelled out by the Angelos family from a corporate standpoint, from a fan standpoint. But they felt like they had good baseball players. They felt like they were going to be able to be competitive. Then last year, last place, 500,000 fans down, revenues down. They've lost the Nationals as part of their media piece with Masson through the lawsuits and all of that stuff. I would say that this is really day one for them. I mean, we gave them to last year and say this is the beginning. This is the beginning for me of the new thing of saying, all right, press box has got it out. You've got some premium this and that. You've got your all-star game coming. You got your television and renovation. You've got left field where you want it now, the wall and all of that. They don't talk to me. They don't talk to anybody. I don't see them do this even with their own employees. What is the grand plan? Is the grand plan hold on to the rails, try to win this year and do the little that we can do and then wait for the strike and then figure it out after the strike? Or how are they thinking in there right now about the grand plan of, come on, let's be honest, you're 338,000. What do they have to sell? Because the idea was we're going to make the walkway this. We're going to build a disco. We're going to build a Comcast center like they have in Philadelphia, a big super bar between the stadium. We're going to have a gambling complex. We're going to have a hotel. We're going to have a theater. Whatever they're going to do, I don't see any blueprints. I don't see any money. I don't see any planning. They all talked about how they were going to build a battery 2 years ago. And you and I have been sitting here for half an hour just trying to figure out, well, can they win 85 games this year and be competitive? And oh, by the way, there's a work stoppage. So beyond all of this, this franchise in the sky that they believe the Orioles in potentiality and downtown Baltimore and the Harbor Place, which is a mess. I mean, I'll get straight with that, that the fact that I was down there and they still don't have a plan, don't have money, don't have a bank, don't have anything, and it's just sitting there. I don't know what Arrighetti and Rubenstein make of this to think of their investment that 3 years from now they wouldn't hand the keys to somebody and say to somebody like John Moak, flip this thing. Just sell it, get rid of it. It didn't work. We're not philanthropists. We're not here to fix Baltimore. We made a little bit of money. We had fun. We got the hot dog races. Because I feel like Arrighetti wants to own this thing for 15 or 20 years, but he doesn't want to know anybody here, doesn't want to be a part of the thing, doesn't want to have a real plan. I just don't. This isn't a media thing or even a radio station thing or a nasty. This is just like front facing. Larry always like, we're going to build a stadium. We're going to do it downtown. We're not doing it here. We're not. I don't feel any of their absolutes about the big picture of where this revenue's coming from, because it's not coming from dentist chairs behind home plate. I mean, and it's probably not coming from 38,000 people packing the stadium at their price either, anytime soon, even if they win. I just keep thinking media. These cities that they're building in Atlanta that they dream of owning all of this, what Chicago's done with the like, that's got to be the plan if you're really thinking you're going to compete with the Yankees and the Red Sox and the country of Canada, the 51st state, over the next 10 or 15 years to make this thing really good again, excellent again, the Cardinals or whatever that North Star would be. I just don't see them on the pathway to that. I mean, they signed a player. Good. You got to have that. But then there's the business and the community and people like me and you that live here to understand, to buy into what they're selling. That's all. And I don't know that that's, I don't know what they're selling. That's the problem.
Well, I mean, it's a good question. If that's not apparent to people, then that's one of their top challenges. You just mentioned the Battery. I think everybody is continuing to salivate over the opportunity. This past, you can get these are publicly available. But in the last quarter, the organization, the entity that owns the Braves and all of that
Liberty, is
aspect,
that what it's called? Liberty?
announced that they in their release. That last year they did $95 million in revenue, profit from the Battery, and so almost $100 million coming from outside the gates of your stadium, but connected to you.
Hot dogs, they
You
don't
know,
have to sell, right?
this is yeah,
Basically.
this well, this is leases, rent for people in buildings, restaurant taking a piece of that, all those components. That clearly is where most organizations now, including this one in Baltimore, I think probably feel like that's the opportunity. Now, that was supposed, as I understand it, that opportunity was supposed to follow. So you pull down the $600 million, but you're not going to get access to all of it until you commit to a long-term lease, which they haven't yet, which I presume they will in the near future. And at that point, that's where what you're referring to, the blueprints, the stadium, what's going to happen between the parking lots, what's all going to happen there. But keeping in mind that they have a tenant across the parking lot that does have some say in that, because the stadium authority has to build a certain amount of parking spaces for football. All these things have to work together. But yes, ultimately, that's what has to happen. Now, again, I keep coming back to this. I think the baseball lockout and potential strike is a big part of that, because you don't know necessarily what your industry structure is going to be after that.
So
And
they can't
so
make any big decision. We shouldn't expect them to make any big decisions the next 9 months, right?
I think they probably have internally have some planning around that. But yes, the question is, which pieces of those revenues are going to be shared, right? Maybe at some point the players are going to say, okay, we're going to talk to you about a salary cap, but we expect that non-baseball revenue to go into the pot so that we're sharing off of those as well.
That
So,
95 million you're talking about in Atlanta, that ain't going to the
yeah,
players.
right now it does not go to the players because it's non-team revenue. It goes directly to the owners. It's off the balance sheet of the team. So, look, the Players Association, Bruce Meyer is now the executive director. He's a seasoned labor negotiator. I'm sure that they know all this. And so, again, from the standpoint of professing what you have or what your plan is, I think when you're in a situation where you don't know what your true economic platform is going to be, you might be reluctant. You certainly should be planning for it, but you're not quite sure which one is going to suit you best. Where I always say to the students that we teach, I'm going to show you a stack of pennies, and that pennies is going to be 100 pennies. What I care about is not the stack, how high it is. I care about what my share is. If I'm taking 60 of those pennies and giving you 40, better for me, right? If I'm only taking 40 and giving you 60, I don't care how high the stack is. So it really is about which revenues you do control and are not subject to a collective bargaining agreement, et cetera. But again, at the end of the day, teams, no matter where you are, drive most of your revenue from two big categories, media and sponsorship. And then after that, it comes down to game day revenues, merchandise, and some of the other smaller things, parking and all of that. But you do pull down most of your dollars from media and corporate sponsorships at the end of the day. That's where you have to put a lot of your energy, effort, and expense into raising those as big as possible.
Marty Conway is our guest. He's the good professor of all things sports business at Georgetown University, longtime baseball insider as well. All right. So the salary cap thing and the war, where do you sit as an old school guy on it, that had they figured out a salary cap in 2002, like hockey did or the NBA, that baseball would be better served? I can't even in my mind envision the Pittsburgh Pirates having a $225 million a budget. And I can't imagine the Dodgers or the Yankees ever saying, well, we really want other teams to share in more. We've already given revenue sharing, that they're ever going to get a detente. And I keep thinking to myself, will I live long enough to see baseball get a salary cap? And will Bryce Harper and Scherzer and the Orioles have one in Bassett, one of the representatives, will they be softer than the previous generations were? Like Bryce Harper went after Manfred in the locker room last year. I think this will get real ugly by the end of the summer. And these guys, this is the weird part. We don't think these guys have more money than any of the other players have ever had. And they have a bigger war chest than any of the players have ever had. So going back to Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell riding in limos and pissing everybody off 40 years ago during the middle of the strike. And I remember all this stuff as a kid. And as an adult, I've been through this for 35 years on the air. I keep thinking to myself, how do the owners think that they're just going to put this medicine down the players' throats when they have more money than they've ever had, and they need the players? Rubenstein and Arrighetti need Pete Alonso on their side a year or two from now, not to be at war with him 12 months from now in a general sense. And I feel like they only know war, Marty. And you and I, as fans, you being on the inside, me as a media, we only know war. I cannot imagine that this isn't going to be uglier than 94 was, right? Like in a general sense about the money. And I keep going back to this. When I talk to really smart people, I say, what if I sat with Rob Manfred and I said, look, what is the real plan for revenue here for what you just said, media? Media is where all the money is, and then the sponsorships and Mr. Big Ticket in town corporate money in each municipality or region for these teams. What is the media solution? And what does the revenue look like for that? And I always use Luke's mother as an example, because Luke's mother likes baseball. She's up in Pennsylvania, but has had it on cable television. When they start saying to her, you're going to have to give me $99 or $249 or $349 for a year or whatever, the people that are on the periphery, not you and me that are addicted to it, the people that just want it on but don't want to pay for it, when they go away, they go away. I know this for sure. I haven't watched a Wizards or a Capitals game in 7 years. I don't even know what channel it's on. It doesn't come to my Twitter because the algorithm thinks I don't want it. And it's just like the Terps are that way. They don't exist to me. Like they just, I don't get any of their marketing. I don't get any information. I can't name one player on the Maryland Terps basketball team this year. Not one. I could barely name the coach, Buzz. So once you leave it, once you stop watching General Hospital, you don't watch it anymore. And that's for me with the baseball thing, for them to really churn this up with new ownership. I felt like that was their real opportunity to say, Angelos isn't here anymore. You're welcome to come back. They certainly haven't made me feel welcome to come back. And it doesn't feel like fans are welcome to come back at their price, at full price, because that's the corporate mindset that Katie Griggs and Rubenstein, the new people, are like, we're not family. We're not local. We're selling you a product. Buy it at full price.
Well, you mentioned a couple of things. First of all, back to the players, you're right. They've been more, they have more resources than ever, and it's been historical with the, exception here and there. The owners have broken before the players would break, right? The owners would get close to spring training and then realize, wow, I can't afford
Zero revenue.
to I can't afford a half a season or whatever it is. They saw what happened during the COVID year, 60 games, other things like that. And that really scares them because not all of them have enough money of their own to continue the operation when limited revenues are coming in. Some revenues continue to come in from national contracts or something like that, but limited revenues. And so, yes, I've always seen the players, in that regard. The second thing is, if you're going to have a salary cap, they're going to insist on a salary floor. And the question will be, not that Pittsburgh Pirates will commit to spend, $225 or two, even $200 million in a year. Will the Pittsburgh Pirates be able to afford to spend $135 million a year? If the is the makeup of the Pittsburgh market able to afford that? So there's going to be specific arguments on the cap, and there's going to be specific arguments on the floor. And that's why I say this is a, if you're going to have that conversation, it's not just capping the revenues that you pay, the salaries that you're paying to players, but what is the minimum going to be? And can Pittsburgh and Cleveland and Kansas City and Tampa and some of these other markets that have been economically challenged, are they going to be able to rise to that level? That is another consideration, which is why it's a very complex situation. Now, as an observer, I sit back and I say, okay, maybe a salary cap could be beneficial in certain areas. But if you listen to the players and you listen to people who know baseball, if you look at the last 25 years, look at the variety of teams that have actually won a World Series. Now, it's been 2015 since Kansas City won because we had COVID and then we had new ownership with the Dodgers, who's willing to outspend others to do it. So there's these definite periods, but when you pull back the calendar of decades, baseball, more than any other sport, has had more variety of teams actually winning or at least getting to the World Series because of the different models. Remember, the Tampa Bay Rays have been to the World Series in the last decade, but people want to sometimes gloss over that. So there are ways and methods to do it within the system that it is. And so I think ultimately that's why this is such a complex organism. But I do not see the players, that ghost of Marvin Miller, I say, sits on their shoulder with Don Fehr, pitching in from his own position sometimes on the other side saying, don't do it. Don't do it. Because if you give in here, you're going to give in there and you're going to have to give in there. And at some point, and so
It's a
you have.
non-starter, right? Salary
Yeah.
cap is, we're not even going to discuss
Yeah.
a structure for that because we're just not going to agree to it. That's
I would
that.
just say this. Have you ever seen a manager go out to the mound when Max Scherzer was pitching and try to take Max out of the game, right? He holds on to the ball, he glares at him. That's Max Scherzer is part of the players' negotiating committee. You're across the table from one of the greatest competitors in the history of baseball. And so if you think that you can somehow intellectually change Max's mind about this when he's been the beneficiary. I saw the other day, he's, I think, approaching 20 years. He's 18, 19 years in the big leagues. He's made close to $375 million, right? Baseball has been very, very good to Max Scherzer in this current environment. He's going to say, I'm going to stand here committed for you, Gunnar Henderson, and for you, Jackson Holliday, who, by the way, is the son of Matt Holliday, who's gone through this so many times. So you don't think Matt Holliday is saying to Jackson Holliday, no salary cap, son. Look what you've benefited from because I benefited from that. So there's a history, there's a tradition, there's a genealogy now amongst the players that are anti-cap and control. And I think it's going to be very hard. It's like taking the ball from Max Scherzer when you want to replace him on the mound. You're going to have to arm wrestle him at the end of the day. And they've proven to be the winners.
What have you liked about what the Orioles have done? I mean, I've been beating them up here, and I'll continue to
Sure.
beat them up because they haven't been
Yeah.
good humans. But I think the Alonso thing, interesting. Spending
Yeah.
money on a pitcher at the end lets me think that they're more serious than they've been in 30 years. That being said, Yankees, Red Sox, spending money like I did Toronto. The balanced schedule helps them tremendously because they're not going to see all these juggernauts. So for that, I give them the benefit of the doubt. And I said before the injuries, before Kittredge happened this week, Holiday and Westberg, I thought they were capable of winning 90, 94 games, 96 games. Like I thought they could be a really good team if the pitching holds up. I'm getting through spring training now, and I'm starting. I mean, every time somebody goes down and somebody gets injured, I keep thinking to myself, it's not a good sign to have your 23 and 24-year-old guys that you think are good for 1,000, 1,200 at bats this year be right now maybe not good for 500 at bats at of those kinds of quality at bats that I want to see from one-ones like Jackson Holliday versus Blaze Alexander or Kobe Mayo trying to, kick up 35 errors at third base this year. And they're not going to play great defense. But that being said, I'll check off on most of what they did in the off. Luke's upset about the bullpen, and that's fine. And they'll make their way. But I for where they are in the market, if I'm just a fan watching what they're doing on the field, they're putting a representative product on the field to say that I think they'll play meaningful baseball games in August.
Yeah, no, look, I think when you get the big bomber, when you get the Pete Alonso, people love the long ball, right? So if I go out to the stadium and I see to the ballpark and I see Pete Alonso play and he hits a home run, hey, that's exciting, right? But the thing that I think people often misconstrue about baseball is they sit back and watch it and they focus on spring training and all that. It's such a long season. It's way longer than the football season. And so, who's on the field on week one in the NFL really, really matters. Who's on the field on opening day for Major League Baseball matters less than football because Jackson Holliday could be back in, mid-April or late April or all those different things. The team that you put on the field on opening day rarely resembles the field that you go into the postseason with. Because I think last year the Orioles maybe had 60 sub plus different players come through their roster because of their different issues and they did not finish the way they want to. But it's about depth of the organization, which I think they have. I think they've brought their best players in the minor leagues are now there. And maybe there's a couple of others kind of, in the near future. So I think on the baseball side, look, they've signed enough pitching, I think one through four. To be competitive, but yes, there's some questions about the depth. There's some questions about the bullpen. Most teams go into the beginning of the season not being sure really what their bullpen is. You won't know until these guys actually participate two, three, four, five, six different times. How does the manager use them? Does he, is it a Buck Showalter, wise about doing it? Then I think on the non-baseball side, I think the fan experience this year between audio, video, access. I think people are going to see that and it's going to really resonate with them. Look, the number one thing is if you improve the Wi-Fi access and people can still be on their phones while they're, in front of the game, all those things go into the fan experience and the psyche of the fan that says, yeah, let's go back. It might not be next month. It might not be till June with my office group, but we're going to go back. And so I think those are the things that they've done from a positive standpoint. But I think to your point earlier, you're right. I think the starting line for this organization and new ownership kind of begins now. You've gotten some of the money into the stadium. You've done your research. You've got the new fan experiences. Now I think the measurement of how you're going to perform as an organization probably begins now compared to the previous 2 years when there was a lot of here's what we're going to do, here's what we're going to plan for. And now all those elements should be in place, and let's see how the fans and the market of Baltimore reacts to it and responds.
Oh, we all know the condiment race is the only thing that really matters around here. Marty Conway is here. He is all things business and sports business at the Georgetown University and a professor and a wise man about all the industry stuff here. Hey, it's baseball season. I'm excited about it. I do think the team can be competitive, and I think. Look, I've been 35 years here doing this. I haven't had a whole lot of marches where I could sit here and say they can win 90, 95 games. This is one of those years. And I do think putting Pete Alonso out, on the warehouse and having a star player and having Gunnar Henderson coming, having a new manager, I'll buy into all of that. And whenever they have band media hot dog race night, I guess I'll be the guy out there. But I will be watching, and it's always good to talk to you. Hey, World Cup is the next thing we'll do, right? You and
We
me, right?
will. We will. Next time.
Will the world come? That's a great question.
Can they get
It's
in? Can they get in?
I might be leaving the country this month, and I'm worried about getting back in. And I've never had to say that because I really am an American citizen that was born here, but I've never been pulled out of a van and asked about it. He is Marty Conway. You can find him out. He tweets from time to time and is out on the social medias. And happy opening day to you, Marty. I hope we get to go to a ball game together this year.
I would love to. Let's do that.
All right. Make sure it's a night when Trevor Rogers is pitching so we have a chance to win, or Kyle Bradish. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Happy opening day to everybody.